You're listening to a Dwell Community Church production. If you'd like to check out more resources, visit dwellcc.org.
Welcome and happy Mother's Day to all the moms. How many of you are moms? Oh, come on, more than three, four. Well, welcome and thank you for your efforts on our behalf. Keeping the world populated, very important. Actually, we're going to talk. We've been doing this series on joy and sacrifice. And as I was preparing this week for this talk, I thought, you know, what more appropriate picture of joy and sacrifice could you have than motherhood, right? So thanks for helping us illustrate this really super important biblical point. Okay, so as we were saying, we've been doing a series here over the last several weeks on the topic of joy from the book of Philippians, which is often called the letter of joy. And because why? Because the term joy or rejoice is used in a more concentrated way in the book of Philippians really than anywhere else in the New Testament for sure. So we've been talking about it thematically as joy gets connected with various parts of life's experience and of Paul's experience specifically, writing from prison as he is. It really kind of opens the door to a deeper understanding of the work that God intends for each of us, really on the experiential side of the Christian faith. And why I think this is so important is because we've gone through the winter of great discontent for the last year to struggling under this COVID situation and being isolated and inside. And I think it's really important just for us to take a step back out of perseverance mode to say, you know, God has something sweet for us to experience. And now is really the time, I think, to just begin to focus on the beauty of following Christ and the joy that God intends to build into our souls. So this evening we're talking about joy in sacrifice. And our passage is Philippians 2, 17 and 18, in which Paul says, I will rejoice even if I lose my life, pouring it out like a drink offering to God. Just like your faithful service is an offering to God. And I want all of you to share that joy. Yes, I urge you to rejoice in the same way, and I will share your joy. And so here Paul is talking about joy or rejoicing in the context of significant sacrifice. And he's not only explaining to the Philippians his own experience of sacrifice as he's writing from this Roman prison, but he's inviting them to connect with God's call on their life to experience joy through sacrifice. And that is just such an odd juxtaposition of ideas, isn't it? We think of joy and sacrifice in completely different categories. How could it be that we can find joy in the place of sacrifice? Years ago, I took my mother to Europe to visit her ancestral home. And while we were there, since she's of French extraction, we spent time right at the beach in Normandy where D-Day occurred, and just walking through the graveyard there of the thousands of people who gave their lives in sacrifice for the defeat of an existential threat to humanity, and just being aware of the hallowed ground on which we stood and the enormity of the sacrifice of many of these people younger than my own children. And so just to think about what sacrifice really means helps us, I think, appreciate in a deeper way the kind of joy that Paul is here talking about. So let's think about this just for a little bit. He says, even if I lose my life, pouring it out, he says, like a drink offering. So he's talking in terms of sacrifice here, an offering. And the point that I want to begin with is just that not all sacrifices are the same. And so he's talking about a very specific kind of sacrifice. We think, for instance, of people who've been prepared to sacrifice everything they've got for a lie. That's why those crosses were there on this ocean of graves on the ocean side in Normandy, because many people believed a lie and were prepared not only to die for it, but to kill for it as well. And so that's a sad sort of thing, but we make the point that sacrifice in itself, it has no nobility. Sacrifice alone doesn't tell us much. And that in fact, sometimes it's people who are willing to come alongside those who are in an important way wasting their opportunity in life by living for and dying for something that is false that we really appreciate. One of my kind of favorite people as a Christian thinker is the German Helmut Thielicke, who was a pastor and a theologian in Germany in the 1930s and 40s. He was one of the leaders of what's called the Confessing Church. These are the people who refused to bow a knee to Hitler and the rise of Nazism and went underground during the war and refused to go along with the lie that was being perpetrated. And the fascinating thing about Thielicke and others with him, Dietrich Bonhoeffer is a name probably familiar to many of you, who is a colleague of Thielicke. After the war was over, and just the extraordinary carnage that was brought to Germany and to the rest of Europe through this incredible lie, Thielicke devoted a significant portion of his life to go back to these men who took up arms in the name of a lie and killed in the name of a lie and were shattered because of the lie, and just gave himself to helping them process through what does life mean, how can they rebuild. It was an incredible act of mercy, and out of it he wrote a book called Nihilism, Its Origin with a Christian Answer. A book that I just think is really important even for today, as so many in our culture have really lost the moorings and lost any sense that there's something true to be lived for. Thielicke's book really stands tall. So when we talk about sacrifice, we're not talking about sacrificing for a lie, nor are we talking about the sacrifice for profit or advancement. And here, you know, whereas living for a lie and dying for a lie is just an objectively wrong thing, here now we're into this gray area where people are working hard, but the focus seems to be on advancing in my career, advancing my cause or whatever. And that also has its downsides. As a heart attack this man is getting ready to experience describes. Jesus put it this way, he said, in Matthew 16, verse 26, he says, "What will it profit a man if he gains the whole world and forfeits his soul? Or what will a man give in exchange for his soul?" You know, so many of us, and my generation to be sure, grew up in a household that valued this kind of sacrifice for profit and advancement. And in the name of rising socially and economically, men would take upon themselves burdens that far exceeded the needs of their families. And in so doing, trashed their own health and often wrecked their own families. You know, I'm kind of thankful that we've come to a place in our society where people have backed off from some of that aggressiveness and have instituted things that really nurture families in ways that haven't before. But for a lot of us, this is what we see. We see the ambition there, that single-minded focus where I'm prepared to sacrifice everything for the sake of some sort of an ego trophy or economic advancement or whatever, and that's not the kind of sacrifice that's going to have any joy in it ultimately. We talk about sacrificing for kids. Now we're in the positive area where, yes, this is something that's beautiful and awesome. And thanks, Mom, because that sacrificing for yourself, your own interests, your good for the sake of this other human being is something that moves very close to the heart of God. And yet even here, we're not talking about the kind of sacrifice that Paul is describing to the Philippians. He says, he calls his life being poured out as a drink offering. And a drink offering is about a sacrifice that was instituted in the Old Testament from the very early days that was a thank offering. And it comes to us in Genesis chapter 35, verse 14, after God has promised to Jacob the same promise that he gave to his father Isaac and his grandfather Abraham. You're going to be a great nation. I'm going to give you this land. Through you, all of the families, the nations, the tribes, the languages of the earth will be blessed in you. And Jacob, recognizing the historic moment of being the person in his generation to receive this ongoing promise to what becomes the Jewish people, gives thanks to God by building a monument, just really very much like what we have right there on your screen, and then pours water over it as just in a symbolic way, just showing the abundance of God's goodness and God's graciousness. And this becomes sort of a picture of what the life of God's people is about, and of Christ followers in particular. Paul put it this way in 2 Timothy chapter 5, verse 6. He says, I'm being poured out as a drink offering, and the time of my departure has come. And so he looked at his whole life as this pouring out in gratitude for the amazing things that God has shown him. That to give our lives in this way to God is a response to his incredible generosity towards us. And this is not something, again, just limited to Paul or to a limited number of people, but Paul says in Romans 12, verse 1, he says, present yourselves as a living and a holy sacrifice acceptable to God. He's calling on all of God's people to begin to view their lives in sacrificial terms. That the real benefit that God brings to us as his children, the pathway of real blessing and joy in our lives goes through the gate of voluntary suffering that we call here a sacrifice. Now let's just kind of put a few of these pieces together, because Philippians, the book of joy, is also Philippians, the book of gratitude. And you can see that connection in almost every chapter. Here's just a few examples. He says, first, in terms of I pour my life out to God and for his purposes as a expression of generosity, he says in chapter 1, verse 3, I thank God every time I think of you. And here Paul is just saying, look, you know, the really sweet thing about knowing God and walking with him is that we don't walk alone. That we have many people in our lives who are with us along the way, who supply what we need. And that's why he's writing, in fact, this letter, because they had supplied an important need in Paul's life while he was in prison. And so the response of gratitude for the abundance of the Philippian partnership and of their gift to him was to say, I guess I need to find more of me to give to God and to his purposes, because this is the real sweetness of life, to experience it in this way, in full partnership. He says in chapter 3, talking about the God's grace, that giving our lives as a sacrifice to the things of God and for God personally is a response to his generosity towards us and our salvation. He says, yes, everything else is worthless when compared to the infinite value of knowing Christ Jesus, my Lord. For his sake, I've discarded everything else, counting it as garbage so that I could gain Christ. In this really incredible section of chapter 3, Paul talks about all of the things that he accomplished as a Jew, and the fact that he was respected by his peers. He was a young but very well-known theologian. He was zealous for his ancestral traditions. He was a Pharisee, meaning that he took the law seriously and lived it in an upright way. And yet, that didn't bring him anywhere closer to God. And in his mercy, God disclosed himself to Paul. And in an instant, the instant when Jesus himself said to Paul, Saul, Saul, why are you persecuting me? His entire world was just undone, and he realized, my God, I've been sacrificing my life on the altar of a lie. That somehow through my performance, my good works, my adherence to my traditions, that somehow this is bringing me closer to God. And now what I'm realizing is that it has been the greatest barrier between myself and God. And so he is just full of this incredible gratitude that God has pursued him nonetheless, That though he's a rebel, God has pursued him and demonstrated himself to him and revealed himself to him so that he can say in 1 Timothy chapter 1, verse 15, that he is the foremost of all sinners. He's the most evil person that he knows. We should all be able to say that of ourselves. And he says that God showed his mercy to Paul as an example to anyone who might believe. He says, look, it doesn't get worse than me. And so if God can forgive me and love me and care for me and show mercy to me, well, you've got hope too. You've got reason to believe that God is going to be able to move into your life as well. And so just overcome with this palpable sense of mercy, of grace, Paul's like, the only reasonable and appropriate response to this generosity from God is just to turn around and give him what I value, to place this before him. Use it. Use me. I just give myself to you for whatever purposes you may have. And I just think that, you know, if you really understand the depth of God's grace to you personally, the result of this is this deep sense of gratitude that kind of animates your life. This sense of privilege that you get to be able to conduct yourself in a way that is advancing the cause of Christ. The thing that will move and change and recontour the landscape of eternity God has given to you. You unworthy vessel of his honor. And so just in the recognition of this fact, that washing over us who understand the depth of our wrongdoing, of our guilt, just respond by an outpouring of gratitude. I don't have much, but I've got me. Take me. Do what you want with my life. That's what he's describing here. It's beautiful. It's awesome. And finally, in chapter 4, he talks about God's faithfulness as a catalyst for his gratitude. Be anxious for nothing, he says, but in everything by prayer and supplication with thanksgiving. There's that term again. Let your request be made known to God. And God's peace, which surpasses all understanding, will guard your hearts in Christ Jesus. And so there it is. Just that belief, that understanding, that experience of life that, you know, the reality is that through all the changes that happen in life, the difficulties that we encounter and so forth, God has always been there. God has always taken the difficult things in life to shape and mold our character so that we can be more in line with who God intended for us to be. And more in peace with ourselves as a result. And so through all of these things, we just realize that our lives are a bit of a tapestry, a bit of a pattern of the graciousness of God, the fact that he's always been there, he's always been involved in whatever circumstances of life we've been in. And so how do you respond to a God who's always been there for you? Well, here I am for you. It's that response of the grateful heart that really defines a growing and healthy Christian. And now we ask the question, so what then does that have to do with joy? Here's the thing. All of us are pouring our life out for something. I want to be clear on this point. Everyone is offering up their lives as a sacrifice for something. Even if it's just for the pleasure of your nerve endings or the size of your bank account or the small bubble of friends that you can connect with or whatever it is, everyone is pouring their life out for something. And you may be here this evening and someone brought you and we're glad that you're here and you're maybe part of what brought you here is just that gnawing sense. There's got to be something more. Yes, I'm comfortable more or less with my life. No one that I know would call it a failure in any way. And yet at the same time, there's just something missing. Something that I lack. Something that I can't quite get my hand on. And really it is this. This is what we're describing here. That the only really satisfying way to live our lives is to entrust our being to God. He's our creator, and just to be able to stand in and say, you made me, you know my design, I've been following my own agenda, and I feel like I'm running on empty at this point. I want the fullness of what I understand that you offer. I get that you said that you sent your son into the world to take upon yourself the burden of our guilt, our alienation from you, and that sounds real inviting to me at this time in my life. To trust you and to learn what does it mean then to experience this powerful moment of mercy and grace, the forgiveness offered freely through Christ. And when we do that, you know, there just is a sense of fullness in our lives that in a very natural way just really moves us into this direction where we say, I've got so much, I've got to give it away. And now we understand. That's the life that God intended for us, to give out of the abundance of what he has given to us. Nothing else ultimately will satisfy. Let's talk about the connection then between this and joy. Joy, I think, again, is rather ironic when you think about the context of the call to sacrifice. How does that work? Well, he says in verse 17, he says, I want all of you to share that joy. He's talking about his own imprisonment, the sacrifice of his life. And he says in verse 18, I urge you to rejoice in the same way. So he's not saying that Paul is in some special, unique class and everybody else is in a different one. He's saying, no, I've offered my life as a living sacrifice to God that it would count and that it would mean something for his purposes. And I'm calling on you, whoever you are as a believer in Jesus Christ, you join in because this is God's way for you. This is the path of joy for you as well. Well, there's just something, again, incredibly ironic about this, that joy, that putting yourself as a sacrifice to God would somehow be the real pathway to joy. And yet it is. Jesus puts it like this. He says, if anyone wishes to come after me, let him deny himself and take up his cross and follow me. Well, that sounds like a lot of sacrifice, not so much joy. But the very next verse, he says, for everyone who wishes to save his life will lose it, but whoever loses his life for my sake will find it. And there's that great paradox. It's as we offer up our lives to God that we actually find what life is intended to be. Let's think about this in more analytical terms. What am I talking about here? Losing your life. What does that mean? Well, it means in part walking away from the ego's endless demands. You know, your need, your desire to have, to be recognized, to be the best, to be comfortable or secure, whatever it is that is driving you, whatever your ego says you must have to be happy, is endless. We each one are like a black hole sucking up all the energy in the universe and are just as empty after having consumed it. That's how black holes operate. And that's really how the heart of fallen people like you and me are apart from God. The path that says what's really important is getting for me is the path that leads to it's never enough. Never really fulfilled, never satisfied. And God has more. Because as we give ourselves to him, as we offer our lives to him, we do find real freedom. Real freedom from the burden of proving our own adequacy, our own importance, being the God of our own lives or whatever. There's a freedom that comes, not just where I don't have to have this compulsion to go out and find whatever it is I think I can find to make me fulfilled in life. But the freedom instead to turn and view other people as more important than myself. Meeting the needs of others being the crucial animating principle in my relationships with them. That's a freedom that our ego will never let us have. Our egos will say, give as far as you get back. As long as it feels good, continue doing it. But at that point where real sacrifice is involved, now you draw the line. And the path of real joy is to say, no, there is no line like that. I'll continue to move toward the needs of others in the name of Christ and for his purposes in their life with no strings attached. That's real freedom. You can't do that under the tyranny of the ego. So when you die to that, when you lose that, you gain something powerful and liberating. Second, saving self is really the same as being self-righteous. Self-salvation. I'm good enough. You know, this is the basic underlying assumption of all religion. All religion is a path of self-justification in one way or another. It's the path that says if I follow the five pillars or the eightfold path or the 12 steps or whatever it is, I can achieve my own salvation. You know, at a certain point, we just have to recognize that we're playing whack-a-mole with our soul. You know, we can defeat this part of what's really broken, but then something else pops up, and we have to go after that, and then there's something else. And it's this endless and futile effort to somehow establish that we're really okay because of our efforts and our ingenuity, our sincerity, and all those things. God is opposed to religion and puts in its place the grace of God. So we can only have one of two ways. Either we are our own saviors or we entrust ourselves to Christ as Savior. And walking away from self-justification by trusting in Christ as Savior brings us the experience of amazing grace. To be the recipients of the mercy of God is a profound and life-changing moment. It's a moment that can only come through humility to really say, I give up. I can't merit this. I'm not good enough. I can't fix myself. And just to acknowledge that to God and say, but you, on the other hand, you have purchased my salvation with your blood. And I thank you for that. And I'm prepared to receive the forgiveness that you freely offer. That is what amazing grace is, that my life is a gift from a merciful God. And when we live under that framework, then we don't have to prove that somehow we're good enough, we're better than, we're worthy of, or whatever it is that it drives us in our own self. It is a liberating, powerful experience to live under the grace of God. And lastly, you know, when we are in our life and in that self-justification, living under the ego's endless demands, there is inevitably an alienation that occurs in our life. Because why? Because we're so self-focused. We're just focused on my needs, my interests. Everyone else becomes sort of a pawn in the ploy to make my life as I intend for it to be. And the reality is that nobody wants to play that role in your life. And that's why over time, people become increasingly isolated and increasingly lonely. I used to say, when I was thinking about this, you know, decades ago, my father died as a pretty young guy. The only people that came to his funeral were friends of my mother or us as his children. He was just that profoundly alienated as a human being because he is the kind of person that I'm describing here on the left. And now I realize that that sort of alienation has really become the cultural mainstream as people are retreating into themselves, into their own little world that we're creating, whether it's online or whatever. And relationships are increasingly difficult, and people are lonely and in a toxic way, unable to form real bonds with one another. And there are reports from Business Insider to Newsweek to the Journal of the American Medical Association, all over the map, that we are killing ourselves by trying to satisfy the demands of the ego that force us into this bitter place of isolation and of alienation. We're in trouble as a culture. That's something worth dying to, because God has something so much better, the peace of God, that enables us to just appreciate what he's brought us. It's enough. We don't need more. What we need is the ability to live in a way that we're giving away what God has given us. Our intellectual skills, our social skills, our emotional resources, our resources of all kinds. When we are living in the true biblical form that says that the earth is the Lord and all that it contains, which includes you and me, when we live that way and just have that relaxed feel about our stuff and have just given it over to the purposes of God, we are at peace. We can't be taken from because we've already given it away. We've said it's the Lord's. And so when we live like that, we find ourselves, and the fullness of who God intended for us to be begins to flower and to develop. Our intellectual lives become sharpened because there's a purpose that our intellect serves. Our ability to overcome the many deficits of our character and personality as God works in our lives to reshape us and mold us because we've given ourselves to him, he takes that opportunity to say, you know, here now, you don't have to live like an antisocial introvert anymore. That's God's thing for me. You can actually form some bonds of friendship that really matter and that last. You don't have to be the withdrawn, depressive individual that your self has made you. You can be freed from that to experience the real joy of what it means to be a Christ follower. Our intellectual lives, our emotional lives, our social lives, all these things, when we give them to God, he uses them for his glory and for our good. And that's why Paul can connect sacrifice and joy. It's awesome. Now, I think there's a couple things that we can think about together. How do we cultivate joy in the context of sacrifice? A couple things. The first, can you describe a time in your life when you really had to take stock and ask yourself what you were pouring your life out for? This is the kind of putting the pieces together and decision making that becomes the defining things in our lives. By the end of our life, it really tells us what we're all about. And second, when Paul viewed his life as a thank offering to God, how has gratitude played an important role in your spiritual development? And I think that these are the kinds of questions that we can get started a little bit here this evening, but then to take on home and take before God and wrestle with him a bit, because the outcome of this will be just the clarity of what does it mean to present myself as a sacrifice for, a thanks sacrifice for his glory and my good. And to begin to see the things for which we can truly have that grateful heart that is so transforming and so fulfilling.
Thanks for listening. This has been a Dwell Community Church production.